Welcome to the Webster Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is IBM Webster MQ Problem Determination Queue Manager Diagnostics. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. The e-meeting URL is available on the Webster Technical Exchange site. Today's webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. Once you're in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. We recommend that you view the presentation in full screen mode. To do this, go to the View in the toolbar at the top of the screen and select Make Shared Area Full Screen. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, or if you'd like to download a copy of the presentation, please go to the Webster Technical Exchange site and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7009878 in the search box found at the very top of the page. Once again, that number is 7009878. This call is being recorded, so you can replay it at your convenience. Early next week, the MP file, along with the presentation, will be available on the previous webcast tab of the Webster Technical Exchange site. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the end of today's sessions, the lines will open for a quick question and answer period. Today's presenter is Barry Robbins. Barry has worked with IBM for over 26 years. For the last 18 years, he has worked customer support, including support of the CICS and TX Series products. In 2002, he joined the Webster MQ support team. Currently, Barry is responsible for resolving customer problems as they relate to Webster MQ for distributed platforms. At this time, I'll let the presentation over to Barry. Barry?
Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to talk about IBM Webster MQ problem determination, queue manager diagnostics. The items we're going to talk about, Webster MQ error logs, the first phase support technology, Webster MQ tracing, and then we'll go into some summary and some questions. So let's get started with Webster MQ error logs. Queue managers use shared resources to communicate within itself and its applications. When connected to the queue manager, error messages or information messages are routed to the queue manager-specific error logs, and I've listed the location of those error logs here for both Windows and for Unix. By default, they're going to be for Unix var MQM queue managers, the queue manager name, error directory, and for Windows, that's going to be in the C drive, program files, IBM, Webster MQ, queue manager name, errors directory, but you can control where the product is installed on the Windows system. Other messages will end up in a high-level errors directory. For Unix, it's going to be in var MQM errors. For Windows system, again, it's going to be at the top level in the errors directory. Moving on to 405. Error messages components. Now, a basic error message is always going to include the message number and some basic text. You'll get these with interactive messages. Common interactive message, if you try and start a queue manager, it doesn't exist. You'll get an error message of AMQ 8118, and it's going to tell you that the Webster MQ queue manager does not exist. That's an interactive message. Messages to the logs will also contain additional information, which will include things like the local date and time, the PID, the TID, the user, the program. They'll also include a detailed explanation of the message, suggested actions, and in several cases you'll see reference to an MQ source file and the line in that source file that generated the message. The messages can also contain arithmetic or string inserts. Moving on to 406. Here you see a sample message. Now, the message you see is broken up into three sections. We have the header, the explanation like we talked about, and the action recommendation. You can see inserts here. For example, the AMQ 7472 says object, and then it gives you an object name. That is an example of an insert. You can also see this message does include, at the very bottom, the source file name and the line number where the message originated. Okay. Moving on to 407.
Before going to the next chart, if you cannot join the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to IBM.com and typing 7009878 in the search box at the very top of the page. A technical document with a PDF will display. Thank you. I'll now return the presentation back over to Barry.
Okay. MQ rolls over this error log. There are only ever going to be three files in each of those two directories, and they're going to be named, as you see here, error AMQ ERR 01, 02, and 03. What happens is MQ only actually ever writes to error 01. When error 01 becomes full, what will happen is he will take and rename error 02 to be error 03. He'll rename error 01 to be 02, and he'll start writing to a brand new error 01. And the original error 03 is lost in the process. As we move on to file 8, so when does this rollover occur? Well, by default, we'll do this at approximately 256K. We say approximately because if we're in the middle of a message and it goes beyond the 256K, we'll complete the message. We don't break the message between the files. That may seem very small, and on a very busy system, you could quickly roll out information that you need to resolve an issue with your queue manager. So we do offer some alternatives. In version 6, you can set in the queue manager INI file, and that's located in the queue manager's directory, the qm.ini, you can add the stanza QM error log, and you can specify a size. That size can be anywhere from 1 meg to 2 gigabytes. On a Windows system, this can be done by going into the queue manager's properties and looking at the extended tab, and again, you can set the same range between 1 meg and 2 gigabytes. This will affect the size of the queue manager-specific error logs. If you feel the need to change the high-level error logs, the only way to do that is to set this environment variable. And again, the rules apply as far as 1 meg to 2 gig. If you're running 5.3 and you need to do this, this is the way you do it for the queue manager as well as the high-level error logs. This value is overriding, so if you set a setting in the queue manager in the queue manager INI file to 2 gig for whatever reason, and set this max error log size to 1 meg, this 1 meg value will override that 2 gig setting in the queue manager's INI file. Also note that if you can set this globally, you're going to be better off. If this is not set on a Unix system, if you set it at the user level, and some user is running along without this set and he needs to write a message, we're going to check the existence of that setting. If it's not set correctly, we're going to default back to 256K, and we're going to roll your error logs off. You won't lose the size of the first log as it rolls over. If it was set to a meg, you'll have a meg file over there. But quickly, if he's continuing to write to the error logs, he could roll off all your error logs. So if you're going to set that, the best place to do is set that globally in your system. Okay? Well, moving on to 409. So if we're going to roll off the error log so quickly, what can you do to try and help prevent that? Well, again, in version 6, we give you an option that allows you to exclude or suppress messages. In Unix systems, you'll, again, set this in the qm.ini with the following stanza and use either the message, the exclude message, suppress message, and with suppress message, suppress interval. On Windows systems, again, this is going to exist in the queue manager's properties under the extended tab. Exclude messages basically say, if I get one of these messages, don't even write in the log. Don't fill up the space with that information. Suppress message says, yeah, okay, if I get that, that's great, but I don't want to see it all the time. You know, if I end up with a rash of channels ending, I don't need, you know, a ton of messages telling me my channels are ending. I know that. So just give me one every however long I say. By default, if you don't set a value, it's going to be 30 seconds. The values you can set in there are anywhere from 1 second to 86,400 seconds, which is roughly a day. Now, moving on to file 10, here's a list of the messages that we will allow you to either exclude or suppress. As you can see, most of these are going to be informational. It's important when you're working with IBM service that you make them aware that you have set this. When we're going through the logs, if we're expecting to see certain behavior, we're trying to get an idea of what's going on in the queue manager, not knowing about this could cause us to make an incorrect assumption about what's happening. So if you do set up the exclusion or suppression, please be sure to let IBM service know. Okay? Moving on to 411. What kind of information can you get from the error logs, or what kind of problems can you address? You can address a lot of common channel problems, a lot of common security failures, common clustering issues. You can do log file management for those of you doing linear logging. We tell you the log file that you need to keep around for recovery, the log file you need to keep around for restart, and that lets you archive off or delete old log files. You can also use it for process availability. Is my command server up and running, or has it terminated? Does this mean you'll solve every channel security clustering problem with this? No, but a lot of the common ones you can. Okay? On 412, what are our recommendations? Well, whenever you have a problem, we recommend you save up the log files. And again, I've listed the locations of the error log files. One thing I do want to point out, remember when we talked about the names, whether it's in the QManager directory or in the MQ errors directory, they have the same name. So if you're saving these off, please be careful that you don't overlay one with the other. Be sure to note the time that you observed the problem. Look for related messages before and after the failure. You know, you may be honing in on a message, but there may be an explanation why that came out. Maybe someone's initiated to shut down the QManager, so that's why you're getting failures trying to connect. You want to try and correlate these messages with our diagnostics. By our diagnostics, we mean the FFST information on the FCC files. And if you want, we do provide a manual that talks about every single message that we put out. The list for MQ messages, it'll give you a list of every single message in there with, again, the explanation and the recommended actions. Okay? Moving on to 13. We're going to talk about first failure support technology. First failure support technology was something IBM introduced years ago in an attempt to do whatever we could during the initial failure or problem to provide sufficient information to resolve the issue. My personal feeling is MQ has done an outstanding job in this area. Our FTC files, I think, are extremely useful. It's one of the first things we look at here in service whenever we're dealing with a problem. We write those in the top-level errors directory. Again, we talk about where they are in Windows and where they are in Unix. The naming of the files is always going to be start with AMQ. They're always going to end with FTC. On the AMQ, you're going to see a process number. Now, it may be padded with zeros. It may be short like that. And then it's going to be followed by a number, 0, 1, 2, 3, whatever. It's a common assumption for people to think that that second number is a thread identifier. It's not. It's a file identifier. So why would we have more than one file? Well, you have a limit on your file size. And when you reach that size and we can no longer write to that file, we're going to need to continue to write this information. So we will take and create a new FTC file for the same process and write the information, again, as we need to record the failure. All threads for a particular process will exist in that same file. Another reason that we may write to or create a new file is hit reuse. If you've got a QManager that's been up for an extended period of time, one of our agent processes may go away. He may come back later and reuse the same process ID, but it's not the same process. So rather than run the risk of giving bad information in a file, we'll create a new FTC file with the same name but with the extension number to say this is either because we ran out of space or we couldn't write the file or because this is a different process, you might want to look at it as a separate issue. Okay? Moving on to file 5th or page 15. So the FFST or the FTC layout is broken out into five sections. It's the header, the function stack, the trace history, the component, and the environment. When we write to the SDC file for a particular failure, we're going to write the first four every time. The environment will be written as part of the first write to the file. Now, if we go on and create a .1 file, we will reintroduce the environment to that next or to that new file. But if you have several SDCs in a single file, you only see the environment once. Okay, so we're going to go through each of these components that make up the SDC file. Looking at page 16, what we're going to do now, we're going to hold the presentation for the foils here. It's easier as I go through this to see the actual header. But just so you know, there are eight foils that follow this that go through each and every field and provide some information associated with each field. So let's go ahead and get started. This is the typical layout of an SDC. And we'll start with the first thing at the top, date and time. That requires no explanation at all. Host name, we provide the host name, and we provide the operating system and level. That's followed by the PIS, which is the IBM product identifier. We follow that with levels, which tells you the release of the product, 6020 in this case. We also provide the product long name, RSMQ for AIX. The next field is the vendor. It says IBM, it's always going to say IBM when you're looking at an MQFDC. The probe ID. Now, this is the first key field in the header. The probe ID is a multi-part identifier that helps us here at service and can help you narrow down or identify the problem within the product. The breakdown is three parts. The component, in this case it's AD, followed by the function number 004. So the AD004 provide us with specific function within the product. And then it follows with a probe number. In this case it's probe number 1 for that function. When you're searching for problems in the IBM, through IBM TechNote, this is one of the key fields that you will use. It's a unique, like I said, it's a unique identifier. In MQ, we have approximately 2,000 of these within the product. So we do, like I said, an outstanding job, in my opinion, of trying to identify a problem and give you as much information as possible. Following that is the application name. It's always going to be MQM, again, when you're looking at MQM SDC. The component, remember we talked about the component is... Actually, the component is just the AD. This is actually a bad term here. What you're looking at is a function. So ADH open is the function that we have the problem in. Okay? This is another key field for searching. The next thing down is the source file, and that lets us know here at service which file we actually had and which level that file was at when this FDC was generated. The line number within that source file is followed by a build date, and it's followed by a CNVC level. This information is primarily of use to the service organization. However, if you're trying to match up a problem, you may use these fields to say, okay, yep, everything seems to match. I'm at the level seems to be the same. It's showing the same line number, so I'm pretty sure that what I'm looking at here when I'm looking at this tech note, this is my problem. So, again, primarily for us, but it could be useful to you when you're trying to match it up to something already documented. The next thing down there is the build type. You should always see IKAP in your environment. If you are running with anything else, it's because we have provided you with a special build. Now, that special build may be debug, it may be some special function. But again, in production, you should never see anything other than IKAP. The user ID, Really doesn't require much explanation. It's the user ID and the real username. The program name that generated the FTC here is one of ours, AMQZFMA0, which is our execution controller, which is core function within the product. Addressing mode, here you see 64-bit. This will either say 31, 32, or 64. And the only time you'll see 31 is if you're running Linux on Z-series hardware and you have the 31-bit of the product installed. We provide the process number, which should match the name of the file. The thread. Now, the thread is an MQ-only identifier. Try not to you can't really match this up with a debugger on a platform. These threads are strictly for our internal use. We'll provide a queue manager name. Now, this may or may not be there. Some of these fields that we're getting to now may or may not be included in the FTC. Queue manager is one of those fields. So you may look at an FTC and not see the queue manager name. The connection ID, another one of the optional fields. These may or may not exist. They just indicate to us the various resources that this process was connected to at the time of the failure. And then the major error code. Here's the third piece of the critical information. The major error code, in this case being object missing, it provides you with current reason why we got the problem. If you see a code of stop or stop all, stop means we're going to stop the process. Stop all means we're going to stop the queue manager. Now, if you have a critical process, like I mentioned, the FTC controller, or like your logger, and he issues has a major error code of stop, it's the same as a stop all. If you lose your logger, you're going to lose your queue manager. The minor error code, in this case, it's okay. You'll see something there. If we get an unexpected return code, we get a return code, we don't know what to do with it, we're going to spit out that return code. Following that is probe type. You'll see things like a halt or associated message ID or in core out. Probe severity. Here it's a 2. Now there are severity is 1 through 4, with 4 being informational probe, 3 being a warning, 2 being an error, which is what we have here, and 1 being a critical probe. We don't tend to focus on this, and I'll show you an example of a informational probe, which can actually become a critical probe. So don't focus on that too much. Next thing down is the probe description. We try and give you some details as to why this failure occurred. Now, here we're using just an internal Western MQ error occurred. The FTC sequence number. Now, this will be for the very first probe or first FTC written to the file will be a 0, and then next one will get a 1, and next one will be a 2, and so on. The arithmetic fields. Now, here you'll see I have an asterisk in front of it. That's because I added this field to this FTC. There really wasn't any value, so if there was no value, we're not going to print it. But I did include it here just to have a complete FTC. This will contain numerical message inserts. It could include error nodes, signal numbers, PIDs, again, depending on the description for the problem you're having. The last field, again, was one I added because there wasn't any here. Our comments, and these may have string inserts associated with the error. This one here, for example, we see that we have object missing. It would have been nice to have here in the comments the object in question, but I'll show you that even without that there, we can still solve this problem. And as we go through this various components of this FTC, this is all tied to the same physical output, so I'll show how they're all related and how we can, from that, solve this particular problem, which is the object missing. Okay? So that takes care of the header. Now, we're going to go forward to foil 25, but as you can see as we page through, we have the description of the various fields with some more information for reference. Okay, so on 425, What we're talking about next is the function stack. This will appear immediately below the header. It provides the, let's talk about the fact that MQ keeps track of where it's going. It does this in a thread control block. We keep track of the functions as the process goes through its life. Keeping this updated so that if we need to dump an FTC, we can present this information to you. There are going to be cases where you're going to look at this and you're going to see strictly an XCS FFST, which is the actual generation of the failure. If that's the only thing you see on the stack, it could be that we're early in the initiation of the process or late in the termination of the process, and we're still at the common services layer. And the common services layer is the platform-specific code that supports the various parts of MQ. Or we could be between MQI calls, somewhere within the application when we detect the failure and we throw the exception. The one thing to note about this stack, if you've looked at process stacks before, you always read top being the most current, bottom being the oldest action. MQ in this function stack does the exact opposite. The most current part of the function here was XCS FFST. Referencing back to our initial problem, we have object missing. Not having access to the source, you can still see here that it looks like we were trying to access a queue, probably open something. So you already know that we're trying to open something, and that object or that item that we're trying to open is missing. So again, we're continuing to build on the initial major error code. Moving on to fall 26. Following the function stack, we have a trace history. Now, trace history provides basically a light trace of this component and this thread. It provides you the function entries and exits, the return codes. Not all negative return codes are a problem, and as an example here, we see a return code where we did an environment variable not found. May or may not be a problem, not something that you normally panic over. But you can see, again, continuing to build on our problem, you can see here that we did an open file, and we got the object missing. So now we know that the object in question is a file. Again, without even having to access the source, you've been able to build that much. We still have the question of, okay, so what file? Moving on to fall 27, on a trace history, we will have component dumps. Now, generally, these are control blocks. You may see them formatted. You'll see them a lot of times in hexadecimal with an ASCII catchers out to the side. Most of the time, these are going to be for use only for IBM support. But there are going to be cases where you can get useful information. And here is, again, where we tie this all together. This tells you the file in question that was missing. So you could now, with this information, going from the top of the FTC all the way down, you can determine this file is what the problem is. Let me go see what's going on. Where is this file at? Okay? Moving on to fall 28. The last thing we do as part of the initial FTC is we generate the environment. Again, this is done once per file. And the information you get here would be the equivalent of typing env on a Unix system or set on a Windows machine. Again, I just provide some of my environment here just to give an idea of what to look for, but I'm sure that most of you can run this command and get the same results on your PC or Unix system. Moving on to fall 29. All right, so let's talk about some common FTC files. We have here a Unix example, and we talked about the three key areas, the probe ID, component, major error code. So here's the probe ID. Did you see the XC33801? So we know XC33 is the function. And if we map that out, we here at IBM would see that was the XCHA sync handler. 801 is the probe number, or the error number. the major error code is unexpected asynchronous signal. Now, here you go beyond those three. You can see the program name, in this case was a listener. The comment was SIGHUB. Basically, what this one is telling me, someone said a SIGHUB to the listener, and we're letting you know that happened. MQ will receive this and ignore it. But the long and short of it, someone logged into a system, started a listener from command line, closed a window. Operating system told us that someone closed a window on the listener. It's actually quite common to see this one. It doesn't mean there's any problems at all. I'm trying to remember what the severity of this one was. Not important. Moving on to FOIL 30. Here is another probe, and this one's a little bit more severe. Again, the probe ID, the component, the major error code, statement table full. This is a common problem with AIX, especially when using Java or JMS. You have a limited number of statements available for shared memory. It is not uncommon to overrun that. So you'll see the type of errors you'll get beyond those three. Matching up with the program name says, yep, it's Java. And then the component or the comment field tells you, you know, tried to attach shared memory and couldn't. Couple options, adjust your Java heap. If you find that, you know, even with your Java heap adjusted, you still have this problem, we may have other issues to address, like having shared memory settings. If you're running version 6 and you're running into this and you weren't running into it in version 5.3, I'll give you an APAR number of IY99425 that you may want to look into that may provide some relief for this particular problem. But again, this is a fairly common item with Java. Saying a heap of 2.5 gig, it's easy to overrun the available memory. Moving on to 31. A common one for Windows. Again, the probe, the component, the major error code. The program name here is a sample program that I put together just to put a message. And the comment that we got here was a duplicate XCS2.dll file was found. Now, this is common services. We've talked about that already. Where would you run into this? Well, this is more of a development environment problem that you'll run into. Someone will try and find a way of packaging up a program that they could distribute to other systems, and they'll copy certain libraries over into a private directory and try and run their program, and MQ will detect that and say, no, I only allow one of these to exist, and it needs to exist in our directory where we were installed. And the nice thing, remember we talked about component dumps being useful. Here's another example where the component dump will actually give you the location of both files. They'll say, here's where one's at, here's where the other's at, you need to resolve this. The one that you want to keep is the one that's part of the product install. Moving on to 32. Another common problem here, this is the one I talked about being a low severity or a four informational SDC. Now, a little different here, I searched on probe ID and component. I did not include the major error code. You could, but the major error code here and minor error code were both okay. Why? We're just giving you information. And all we're saying here is this SDC is generated saying, you started the services using the configure or the launching user. That's great. As long as you stay logged into the system, not a problem. If you log out of the system, your queue manager will terminate. You've gone from being an informational message to crashing your queue manager. So understand how, again, the severity is not that critical. It's more critical to understand what the FTC is telling you here. And this one here is an easy fix. You go into DCOM and specify a account like the MUSR_MQAdmin. to start the services, and then you can log off, and it won't have any effect on the key manager. Okay? Moving on to 33. We have a command that's not documented that you may find very useful called FFST summary. When you get an error, sometimes you'll get just a single FTC, but there are times where you're going to get 20, 30, 100 FTCs, and it's like, okay, where do I start? Well, the FFST summary command will go through the FTCs and try and put them in an order of occurrence so that you know which came first, where do I need to focus on. There are some caveats here. First of all, it only works with English timestamps. It will normalize time to GMT, so keep that in mind when you're looking at it. For example, if you're East Coast, it could be 5 or 6 hours off. It must be run in the directory where the FTC files are at. That's because if you have several hundred, again, you can easily overrun the command line. So, you know, whether it's in the errors directory or whether you copied them off somewhere, own that directory and run this command. Default output is to the screen. You can redirect that output to a file. One other problem is time resolution in the FTC file is only to the second. If you have several errors that occur in the exact same second, it is possible that what will be presented to you may be out of sequence. It's not that common to have that, but just be aware that that is a possibility. Generally, we see is we'll see the very first occurrence, and then we'll see a slew of items happen a second after that. And, yeah, they'll all happen at the same time, but that first FTC file or that first error is the one to focus on. The output that you'll get from that, as you can see, it will include things like the file name, date and time, which again is GMT, the program name, the PID, the TID, the probe ID, the component, the major and minor error code, and that actually should be one word instead of the split between two foils or two groups. The major and minor error codes is one item. So, again, a very useful tool. It's not documented anywhere. It's primarily been used by service, but it can be very helpful when you're trying to determine where to start. Moving on to 34, another useful tool, MQRC. Again, not documented, but you saw that we had in our sample FTC object missing. If you type in the MQRC with that, it will give you the hex number and decimal number of the error. If you get a hex number returned to you, if someone's getting that in the program, you can type in MQRC with that hex return code, and it will tell you the actual major error code. Another very useful part or a very useful thing for this command is translating messages. If you're an MQ administrator and when your application people call you and say, I'm getting message XYZ, rather than grab the book, you can go to the command line and type in MQRC minus M, the message number, and it will give you the message, the explanation, and the recommended actions. So if it's a message you don't see all the time, you can jump right in and understand exactly what the person who's talking to you is telling you when they give you a number. Again, not documented. So moving on to 35. So what are our recommendations? Well, like the error logs, we want to save these following any serious error. And they'll be located in the directories like we talked earlier. Be sure to note the time you observed the problem. Use the command FFST summary to observe the order of events. Try to correlate the FFST errors with our diagnostics. By the diagnostics, we mean the error logs. Or events going on in the system. If you have Unix system and you look at the error log in the operating system and it tells you you had problems with a disk drive. Maybe that's relevant to this as well. And manage the FFSD files. This is sometimes a problem. We write these files to that errors directory, and we leave them there. We don't have any method of or any process that cleans those up. So it's possible if you don't manage that, you could have a year's worth of FTC files out there that may not be related to your current problem. A good thing to do is maybe set this up that when you terminate the queue manager, you look at these, and if there's no action to be taken, get rid of them, and then have just FTC files associated with the current run. You may want to archive them off somewhere, so if you're looking for a trend of a particular type of problem. But again, in that directory, you might want to just keep the ones associated with the current run of the queue manager. Okay? Moving on to 36. The first two items we've talked about, the error logs and the first area support technology, the FTC files, you get those without taking any action on your part at all. We're going to write the error logs. We're going to generate the FTCs. You don't have to do anything to enable that. The next thing we're going to talk about, the WebSkyMQ tracing, this requires specific action on your part. Moving on to 37. Tracing simply records sequence of events in a program. It's not like any, it's just like any other product that does tracing. We're just going to try and record what's going on as we go through the execution. We support tracing on all queue managers and clients. We will support tracing of a single queue manager on a system or all the queue managers on the system. The traces are going to be in binary, which will require formatting, with the exception of Windows. Windows, they are spit out pre-formatted. And we ship three programs to control the starting and stopping, start, MQ trace, end MQ trace, and then the DSP MQ trace is what you use to format the file. And even on the Windows systems, we do ship the DSP MQ trace, even though you don't use it. Common traces that you will hear us request use the flag minus T space all, minus T space detail. From a customer perspective, you may want to do tracing of API calls, so you can do a T space API. You may hear us request a minus E flag, which is used for early tracing, used commonly during startup of the queue manager. Moving on to 38. On Windows, we create a pre-formatted file, one for every process in the system. They will go into the top-level directory for trace. The trace will contain a header, which will include the version, the level, the date, the time, the PID, and the process name. Following that, you will see a counter, timestamp, PID, TID, and then trace data. We move on to the Unix. On page 39, you will see we write the files binary, but we'll write them to, the top-level directory, varmqm trace. And it'll be the same thing, one file per process. And they will have the same header with the same information. The only difference comes in the each line of the trace will not contain a counter. That's a Windows-only thing. But other than that, the traces are going to be very similar. Moving on to 40. Now, we talked about the fact that on Unix systems you can use the start end MQ tracing. That is a version 6 statement. If you're running version 5.3, your only option is to use the AIX trace facility. And even on 6, you can still use the AIX trace facility. The nice thing here is if you're dealing with a problem that crosses product boundaries, let's say you're dealing with something memory related, and you're trying to look at your memory mapping or when MQ does a request for memory to the operating system and the return codes we get, you can add those trace hooks in. MQ simply uses the 30D30E trace hook, but again, you can add any other product's trace hooks into that same file, and you'll get that nice interaction between the products. There are some downsides. First of all, the trace traces every MQ action in the system. So if you've got 20 queue managers in there, you're going to get 20 queue managers worth of trace data. There's no way to specify just this one queue manager other than shutting down the others. Everything, all processes will write to the same file, so you don't have the separation of the logger, like we talked about earlier, or the execution controller in its own file. Everything's going to be in that single file. The other thing is the timestamp. It is strictly a delta from the start of the trace. By default, we talk about the fact here that it will overlay old information that's circular. You can do a single pass, but again, even in a single pass, you still have a finite size that you set to start with, whereas with MQ tracing, once you turn it on, unless you've set limits on the size, it will write until it runs out of disk space or until you turn it off. Moving on to 4041. So tracing, normally, again, this is a support tool, but we talked about the fact that you may want to do an API trace to debug an application. There is an example, and this is laid out in the Tech Note 1166937, where we show you how, using trace, you can debug an MQRC not authorized. Now, in 6.0, this particular problem has been moved to the messages, so you can now solve this in the error logs. But prior to version 6, what would normally happen is a customer would contact us with this problem. We would have them get a trace, and we would use basically the information presented in this tech note to help them understand what authorities they need to grant the user to do the command they're trying to do. Again, here's something that you could do on your own now with that information. Another thing is if you're running a trace because services requested you run a trace for a particular problem that's during an FTC, remember we talked about the FTC only having live trace. This will provide us a great deal of details surrounding those trace hooks. It will give us all the threads in that particular process as well. The thing you can do is you can actually search for the function XCSFFST, and we actually trace the creation of the FTC file. So what you see in the FTC file will exist word for word in the trace file. It will let you know, yep, I captured the problem, because we recorded that failure. A good thing to search on. You'd have to format to do that, but again, good thing to search on in the trace file. Okay, moving on to 4042. Summary questions. Okay, on 43, what I provided is the WebSphere MQ support page. This is again, where you can take information that you get from these error logs and from the FTCs to find, hopefully, answers to your problems. And the reason I point this out is we have created over 1,000 tech notes that are FFST-related. A few hundred of those deal with product problems that say you need to apply maintenance XYZ to resolve the problem. But that also means that several hundred of those deal with here's a configuration issue, or here's a problem that really isn't a big deal. So again, this could be very useful for trying to determine based on the three big hitters in the FTC files, help you diagnose some of the problems that you encounter from day to day. The other thing that I'm going to point out here is the must-gather page for the product. Very useful. Without exception, we will get, we will request these two items, the error log and the FFST files, for 90% of problems when it comes to dealing with this product. One thing I do want to mention is something that became available after this presentation was completed. There's a tech note out there, 1263631. That tech note deals with a very specific FTC with a probe ID of XC13003 and the function of XEH exception handler. It provides a great deal of detail on how to debug these particular type of FTCs. The example given in that one deals with a problem with an exit. Very well written, very useful, highly recommended. And moving on to 44. These are some useful WebSphere product family links. I'm hoping you'll find these useful and visit the various sites listed here. And moving on to 45, and we're at the questions and answers.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question, and we will pause for just a moment to assemble our queue. And we will take our first question from David Auerbach.
Yes, hi. My name is David Auerbach. I have a quick question. The AMQER log files are generated in the errors directory. You noticed you indicated you can make them larger with version 6. Is there a way also to extend the number of files that are stored? We have a situation occasionally where the files roll through very quickly and we wind up losing timely and pertinent information.
Thanks, David. No, there isn't a way to increase the number of files. The only thing you do is increase the size. Unfortunately, that's hard-coded. The 3 is the limit. So I would hope by increasing the size, and I mean, 2 gig can give you a tremendous amount of headroom. That might be the best answer.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Next, we'll go to Peter Potke.
Hi, this is Peter Pake. We frequently get the FTC that says bad parameter and searching on the probe ID and opening up a ticket with IBM. They say it's because clients are running the buggy CSD 8 or 9, yet they insist that they're not. Is there any way to prove on our side what client is connecting into us?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
No, we're fortunate to have a stalemate. They say they're the right version, and we got an FTC that says they're not, so. Okay, thank you.
The other thing we could do, Peter, is look at tracing the clients.
Ask the client to run trace then?
Yeah.
Okay, and that would prove what version that they're running? Is there something that the client actually sends that perhaps a sniffer would pick up that we could look at ourselves, or maybe this is some functionality that can be added into the product in the future, because that would be helpful to know what version of clients are coming at us.
No, not really. I mean, we could also get a hold of the jar files from the client.
Mm-hmm.
That might be able. We might be able to, from that, determine where they have the version 9 or 8 or 9 jars.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So I mean, that's always an option. If you've got a client that insists that they're correct, you can always grab their jar files and have them send you their jar files, and we'll take a look at those.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears there are no further questions. Gentlemen, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Thea. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Barry, for presenting today.